transition, and I call it transition to greatness. It's going to be transition to greatness because we're going to do something very fast, and we're going to have a phenomenal year next year.
President Donald Trump at the White House. As the Labor Department reports, the United States lost 20.5 million jobs in April due to the economic devastation of the coronavirus pandemic. The unemployment rate jumped to 14.7%, the worst since the Great Depression. This is Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, May 8th, 2020. Some other headlines. Vice President Mike Pence's press secretary has tested positive for the coronavirus, making her the second person who works at the White House complex known to test positive this week. The president's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, says additional precautions beyond testing and social distancing have been put in place, although he would not specify what they were. New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo seeing positive trends in cases, hospitalizations, and deaths, declaring we're finally ahead of this virus, and he says he intends for it to stay that way. And ceremonies and wreath layings in the U.S., Europe, and Russia on this 75th anniversary of VE Day, marking the Allies' victory over Nazi Germany in Europe in 1945. President Trump visited the World War II Memorial in Washington. And we begin with the numbers in the U.S. First, the cases and deaths. Over 1.2 million cases, over 76,000 deaths. And with the shutdown economy, the April jobs report, again, 20.5 million jobs lost in the month. Unemployment rate at near 15%. The director of the White House National Economic Council, Larry Kudlow, reacting while meeting with reporters.
Do you think the jobs reports are going to get worse before they're going to get better?
May is going to be another tough month.
June, too?
I don't want to throw numbers out. May is going to be another tough month. Look, these numbers, these are numbers that are full of hardship and heartbreak. This is a function of the pandemic, as we know. It's a pandemic contraction, as we know. And the reason I've dodged specific numbers is simply because I don't think any economic models are any good in this particular environment.
Leaving numbers aside, where do you think the trough is going to be? Sometime in Q3?
Yeah, have noted a number of times that the Congressional Budget Office and most private forecasting surveys show a very strong growth rebound in Q3. And that does jive with what we're thinking, but it's just interesting to see it from those other sources. I think we have very strong transition growth. Second half of the year should be very strong. And then I think if we can get a pro-growth, pro-incentive policy mix, which the president firmly believes in, 2021 could be a fantastic year. You can really get a big recovery in 2021.
Larry Kudlow heads the National Economic Council. The Labor Department report shows that about 90% of April's job losses are considered temporary, a result of businesses forced to shut down suddenly due to the coronavirus, but hoping to reopen and recall their laid-off workers. And helping to get to that point has involved, so far, about $3 trillion of federal spending for businesses and workers in three major bills. What about so-called Phase 4? More with Larry Kudlow.
Some congressional Republicans have suggested that a Phase 4 stimulus might not even be necessary. Is the White House on the same page with them on that? I mean, are you guys committed to doing a Phase 4, or are you sort of in a wait-and-see?
We're in a lot of conversations right now. We've kind of paused as far as formal negotiations go. Let's have a look at what the latest round produces. You need a month or so to evaluate that. President has, as you know, has put out a number of his own policy ideas. Payroll tax cuts being one of them, and some kind of liability restrictions, COVID-19 liability restrictions for businesses. I think business expensing, for whether you're a large or a small company. I talked to some of the big car companies in recent days. They're going to try to reopen in a week or 10 days. They will incur a lot of expenses to deal with the virus and, prevent a recurrence. And that'll cost money. And I think every nickel of that should be expensed 100% immediately. So we provide some, tax relief there. President's talked about, opening up America to tourism and travel and restaurants, providing some tax relief there. I mean, his philosophy, as you know, and I just pause a moment on this point, and I'm not here to negotiate with anybody because decisions haven't been made, but his philosophy from day one was lower taxes, lower regulations, opening up energy, and fair trade deals. And I would argue those worked and produced a very strong economy, even as recently as January and February. So whatever policies we come up with will be consistent with that point of view. It's a free enterprise point of view. It rewards success. We think people should be able to keep more of what they earn, and so forth and so on. But on specifics, we're in a lull right now. Kevin Hassett and I had a great phone call yesterday, a conference call, I think about 50 House members in both parties, listening to ideas from them. And, we'll try to process that. So,
White House Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow referring to Kevin Hassett, who chairs the Council of Economic Advisors at the White House. Later in the day, President Donald Trump confirmed that he would prefer to hold off for now on another economic relief bill.
Status of the phase four negotiations earlier, Larry said that they were being paused and potentially for a couple of weeks.
We're in no rush.
The Democrats
have to do what they have to do, but I would say we're not looking. We want to see what they have, but I can't say that we're in a rush. We were in a rush to get the money out to people. We have gotten the money out. Some money is stalled because of state machinery. You know, they have old computers, 45-year-old computers. And we said this was going to happen, and I didn't want to do it that way, but the Democrats insisted on going through this particular apparatus for a certain reason, and that money's stolen, but that's their fault, and they accept responsibility and blame, the Democrats.
President Trump at the White House. Meanwhile, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she is getting ready to unveil a stimulus bill written by Democrats that would increase federal aid to states and cities, expand nutritional benefits and Medicaid funding, and provide monthly payments to individuals. C-SPAN interviewed the speaker for Friday night's Washington Journal Primetime. Here's a portion.
Is there an estimated price tag?
We're working on it. Big.
A trillion? 2 trillion?
You're getting warmer.
3 trillion?
You know, it isn't to me when people ask about the price tag for us to give money and help to the American people, which in many ways is a stimulus, making sure states can meet their payrolls paying them for what they have spent on the coronavirus and the lost revenue, but no other expenses they may have, or putting money in the pockets of the American people. Everybody wants to know how much it costs. But around here, nobody batted an eyelash on the Republican side of the aisle when they, in the dark of night and the speed of light, gave 83% of the benefits of a tax scam to the top 1% in our country. And that was nearly a $2 trillion addition to national debt, which didn't create any jobs except more burden to our children.
Some of C-SPAN's interview with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. You can watch and listen to the entire interview on Washington Journal Primetime tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern on C-SPAN Radio and C-SPAN Television. Democratic Senator Mark Warner has so far supported the bipartisan economic aid programs that have passed, including the payroll protection plan that gives money to small businesses so they can keep workers on the payroll during the coronavirus shutdown. But Senator Warner says he would rather see an approach like the one used in some European countries.
As we look at our response, and unfortunately, the massive amounts of unemployment, and unemployment, while very generous, does not only disconnect you from your job, but also disconnect you, in many cases in our country, as you know, from health insurance. If we look at what our European friends have done, they decided rather than this kind of massive series of new programs, they provided direct wage support, government straight to paying worker salaries. The Danes have done that. The Germans have done it. The Germans probably have done it the best. The Austrians, the Brits, And they've seen unemployment numbers only go up to about 4 to 5%. So I've proposed what I call the Paycheck Security Act, saying let's go ahead, one, make sure a business has shown 20% revenue loss, make sure they don't have a lot of capital on their balance sheet. And if they are really hurting, let's go ahead and pay up to 100% of $90,000 of anybody's salary. Now, I'm not sure we get that full 100% if we got through, but it would be a direct payment program to workers. It would only be for workers who are furloughed. And the Mark Zandi, the folks who make some estimates, assume, while it's, you know, it's costly, it's about $400 billion over a quarter, that really is not much more. It could be actually less than what we've totally spent on unemployment, Medicaid expansion, right, and PPP.
But do you think that will pass?
You know, David, it's a good question. There is a Pramila Jayapal, leader of the Progressive Caucus, has a proposal in the House. I've partnered with somebody I don't normally agree with, Bernie Sanders, and Doug Jones, a very conservative center in the Democratic side. Josh Hawley, a very conservative Republican senator from Missouri, has got a slightly different version of the program. And both the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, and as you well know, they don't agree on anything, both have said this would be a better way.
Right.
So the question is, can we move all of these recently stood up programs to kind of a new glide path? This could attach to, right, PPP. It would also deal with the middle market firms that have gotten no support so far. So I think it'll be thoroughly discussed. And I do think most folks would agree that if we had, you know, the benefit of hindsight, this would have been a better approach to start with.
Senator Mark Warner of Virginia with David Rubenstein of the Economic Club of Washington, a virtual forum today. And the IRS saying today that if you have not received your stimulus payments from the earlier economic aid bills, if you haven't received them via direct deposit, that's the $1,200 per person, $500 per child, you have until noon on Wednesday, May 13th, to enter your direct deposit information at the Get My Payment web tool. After that, the IRS will tag your file as requiring a paper check, and that's going to take longer. So far, 130 million payments, they say, have been sent out of more than 150 million expected to be made. On Wall Street today, the Dow was up 455, NASDAQ up 141, S&P up 48. A second positive coronavirus test now in the White House complex, this time in the office of Vice President Mike Pence. Here's a reporter's question today to President Trump, and you'll also hear an answer from the White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows.
Two positive tests in the last 2 days. What precautions are you taking here at the White House to prevent the virus from spreading further? And are you worried that it's kind of already in the White House and might be?
Well, I'm not worried. No, I'm not worried. But, you know, look, I get things done. I don't worry about things. I do what I have to do. We've taken very strong precautions at the White House. But again, we're dealing with a invisible situation. Nobody knows. When I see that 66 in New York, 66%, where people stay home and that's where they're catching it at home, who would ever think a thing like that's possible? So all you can do is take precaution and do it the best you can. But Mike was tested today, and Mike was tested negative.
So are you taking additional steps here at the White House in the light?
Yeah, we're taking very official steps. Mark, do you want to discuss that?
We've already put in a few protocols that we're looking at, obviously, to make sure that the president and his immediate staff stay safe. But it's not just the president. It's all the workers that are here. Obviously, you're here on a daily basis. But the protocols that we're putting in place puts a stronger emphasis on making sure that we do the mitigation that we need to do to make sure they're safe. I don't want to get into all the procedures that we have embarked upon, but I can tell you this is probably the safest place that you can come to. All of you, as you know, have to be socially distanced from the president. His meetings that he has are done with a social distancing plan in place. Outside of that, we may take some additional precautions as it relates to the vice president and the president in terms of just making sure that the people that come in contact with both of them are done, that it's done in a way that makes sure that we keep the president safe. Additionally, every member that came here today, they were tested just in case there's a closer contact than we might have. But we put in some additional protocols over the last 48 hours, and we'll continue to monitor.
White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows with the president at the White House. This was during a meeting with Republican members of Congress and some questions from the media. President Trump publicly identified the affected staffer in the vice president's office, and it is his press secretary, Katie Miller, who is married to Stephen Miller, who is a top advisor to President Trump. The White House not commenting on whether Stephen Miller has been tested or if he is still working at the White House. This is Washington Today. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, having overseen an outbreak that killed more than 20,000 in his state, about a third of the nationwide total, had some relatively good news today.
The good news on the overall is we're finally ahead of this virus, right? For so long, we were playing catch up. We talked about the facts and circumstances that we found out about it. It was in China, it had moved, and we were playing catch up. We were behind it. Now, I feel for the first time, we're actually ahead of it. We have showed that we can control the beast. If you look at those numbers coming down, remember our numbers are coming down in New York. Most states in this country, you still see the numbers going up. You take New York out of the national numbers, and you see the cases are on the incline. We have it on the decline. So we have the beast on the run. There's no doubt about that. We haven't killed the beast, but we're ahead of it. And the hospitalization rate is coming down, and the death rate is coming down. So that's all good news. And I feel that we are, for the first time in this engagement, we're actually ahead of the virus. We have to stay there, and we have to figure out what the next move is that the virus is going to make, and we have to stay ahead of it. But we are ahead of it, and we are in control of our own destiny. You know, why is that virus on decline? Why are those cases going down? Because we're making the number of cases go down. We are reducing the number of infections. If we didn't do anything, you would have seen that infection number keep going straight up. We reopen irresponsibly, you will see that infection number go straight up. We are reducing the rate of infection by our actions, wearing the masks, the close downs, the precautions. We turn that curve, no one else. And we are going to determine what that rate of infection is going forward. You tell me how we behave today, I will tell you the rate of infection 3 days from now. You tell me how we behave today, I'll tell you the number of people who walk into a hospital in 7 days or 10 days. It is that clear, cause and effect. It is that clear. That's also liberating. Finally, our destiny, our future is in our hands.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo in Poughkeepsie. He also said, though, that a 5-year-old boy in New York City died from coronavirus-related complications, and the state's health department is investigating several other cases. And he said this could open an entirely different chapter because he said, I can't tell you how many people I spoke to who took peace and solace in the fact that children were not getting infected. Over in New Jersey, Governor Phil Murphy took the opportunity during his daily briefing on this VE Day, Victory in Europe Day, the victory over the Nazis in World War II, to push back against protesters who compare coronavirus-related limits to fascism.
Some misguided people, even in our own state, are taking to calling the necessary efforts we have undertaken to save lives and stop the spread of COVID-19 as fascism. Across the nation, we have seen other freely elected leaders of both parties, by the way, demeaned and depicted as Hitler himself. Not only is this an entirely disgusting false equivalence, it is ignorant and it is repugnant. It is ignorant of history and the horrific toll of fascism that is counted in the tens of millions who were killed by its megalomaniacal leaders, led by Hitler, but not only Hitler, 20 million soldiers, 6 million Jews, and millions of others in death camps and untold millions of civilians. Words matter, and when the word fascism or words like it is raised and Nazi slogans are used by people who claim to be patriotic Americans to protest against freely elected leaders, whether here or elsewhere across the nation, it should give us pause. It is our solemn duty to uphold the legacy as New Jerseyans and as Americans of that generation which fought valiantly to preserve the freedoms of hundreds of millions to live up to. The rights of people today to protest are sacrosanct. That's not in doubt. But so should our history. So should decency.
New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy in Trenton. The death toll in his state from the coronavirus is nearing 9,000. He said the rate of spread is slowing across the state, and there may be some limitations lifted, including beaches and boardwalks opening, he says, likely by Memorial Day, with restrictions on that as well. For non-essential businesses, curbside service could be allowed soon in New Jersey. But New Jersey is among the outliers. Most states are moving more quickly to lift restrictions to various degrees. In Alabama, an announcement from Governor Kay Ivey.
In a nutshell, here's what's new about our amended order. All non-related work gatherings of any size that cannot maintain a consistent 6-foot distancing will be prohibited. This differs from the previous order that limited group sizes to 9 or less. Beginning this next Monday, May 11th, restaurants will be able to open at a 50% occupancy rate with a 6-foot spacing between tables and other guidance that has been agreed upon by the Alabama Restaurant and Hospitality Association. Barbershops, hair salons, nail salons, and other similar type establishments will be able to open up with restrictions, again with guidelines that are developed by the State Board of Cosmetology. Gyms, athletic facilities, and athletic classes may resume, and this is key, but they will be under strict guidance that they practice intense cleaning methods and social distancing. And I know full well that I sound like a broken record, but friends, I can't say this more clearly. The threat of COVID-19 continues to exist. It is truly deadly, and it must be addressed.
Governor Kay Ivey in Montgomery, Alabama. She also today issued an emergency proclamation designed to protect healthcare workers and businesses from coronavirus-related lawsuits if they, quote, comply with or reasonably attempt to comply with applicable health guidance. This lawsuit protection is something that's also being discussed and promoted by Republicans at the national level. As the World Health Organization began its briefing in Geneva on the coronavirus, the Secretary General noted that today is also an anniversary of the eradication of another terrible disease. Here is Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus.
Exactly 40 years ago today, on the 8th of May 1980, the World Health Assembly officially declared that the world and all its peoples have won freedom from smallpox. Smallpox is the first and to date the only human disease to be eradicated globally. Until it was wiped out, smallpox had plagued humanity for at least 3,000 years, killing 300 million people in the 20th century alone. Its eradication stands as the greatest public health triumph in history. As the world confronts the COVID-19 pandemic, humanity's victory over smallpox is a reminder of what's possible when nations come together to fight a common health threat. Many of the basic public health tools that were used successfully then are the same tools that have been used to respond to Ebola and to COVID. disease surveillance, case finding, contact tracing, and mass communication campaigns to inform affected populations. The smallpox eradication campaign had one crucial tool that we don't have for COVID-19 yet, a vaccine. In fact, the world's first vaccine.
Head of the World Health Organization, Dr. Tedros in Geneva. The worldwide numbers on the coronavirus are more than 3.8 million infected, more than 260,000 killed, according to data compiled by Johns Hopkins University. As mentioned earlier, today is also the 75th anniversary of the end of World War II in Europe, VE Day, or Victory in Europe Day. And President Donald Trump laid a wreath at the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., where taps was played over the sounds of the memorial's water feature. Eight World War II veterans joined President Trump at the memorial. The youngest was 96 years old. The president did not make any remarks there, but his press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany, did later at her briefing at the White House.
Today marks the 75th anniversary of VE Day, a triumphant milestone in our nation's history and indeed in world history. 75 years ago today, our brave American forces defeated fascism in Europe, and through the selfless devotion of thousands of patriots, they saved the world. Over 180,000 Americans gave their lives in the European theater during World War II. And I want to take just a moment to honor their service and their sacrifice. Thank you to all of our veterans. You are truly, truly our heroes.
The White House press secretary. And it was 75 years ago today that President Harry S. Truman addressed the nation on TV.
This is a solemn but glorious hour. I wish that Franklin D. Roosevelt had lived to see this day. General Eisenhower informs me that the forces of Germany have surrendered to the United Nations. The flags of freedom fly all over Europe. For this victory, we join in offering our thanks to the Providence which has guided and sustained us through the dark days of adversity and into light.
President Truman's national address on this day in 1945. There were also small ceremonies across Europe today, since much of the continent remains under coronavirus limits. French President Emmanuel Macron and German Chancellor Angela Merkel laid wreaths. Britain's Queen Elizabeth II gave a national address, which began with a portion of her father, King George VI's radio address on May 8, 1945.
Let us remember the men in all the services, and the women in all the services who have laid down their lives. We have come to the end of our tribulation, and they are not with us at the moment of our rejoicing.
I speak to you today at the same hour as my father did exactly 75 years ago. His message then was a salute to the men and women at home and abroad who had sacrificed so much in pursuit of what he rightly called a great deliverance. The war had been a total war. It had affected everyone, and no one was immune from its impact.
Queen Elizabeth II. She also made a connection between her nation coming together during World War II and what's happening now. More from her national address.
As I now reflect on my father's words and the joyous celebrations which some of us experienced firsthand, I'm thankful for the strength and courage that the United Kingdom, the Commonwealth, and all our allies displayed. The wartime generation knew that the best way to honor those who did not come back from the war was to ensure that it didn't happen again. The greatest tribute to their sacrifice is that countries who were once sworn enemies are now friends, working side by side for the peace, health, and prosperity of us all. Today it may seem hard that we cannot mark this special anniversary as we would wish. Instead, we remember from our homes and our doorsteps. But our streets are not empty. They are filled with the love and the care that we have for each other. And when I look at our country today and see what we are willing to do to protect and support one another, I say with pride that we are still a nation those brave soldiers, sailors, and airmen would recognize and admire. I send my warmest good wishes to you all.
Britain's Queen Elizabeth II. Russian President Vladimir Putin gave a VE Day speech to thousands of soldiers and veterans in Red Square in Moscow, saying the lessons of the past war are relevant once again. We have done and will do all that is necessary to guarantee the high capabilities of our armed forces. And he added that those in the modern Russian army remember the oath of Soviet soldiers who fought Nazi Germany: I die, but I will not surrender. This has been Washington Today. Thanks for being with us. Remember, you can download the free C-SPAN Radio app to take C-SPAN Radio with you and get our podcasts, including of this program. Podcasts also available at cspan.org/podcasts. Have a good night and weekend, and stay safe.